Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi, brand new Masechta, Maseches Makos, Daf Beis. We begin at the Mishnah, right on top. Ketzad ha'edim nasim zoymimin. How do edim become edim zoymimin? Now, zoymimin means plotters, schemers. They alleged that so and so, you know, did some sort of offense, or you know, has some sort of supposed monetary obligation, or perhaps that person himself is a puzzle. He's a kohen that's not a kosher kohen. He's a son of a couple who got married inappropriately, etc., etc. So these are Edom and Zoymimin. Edom who have been discovered as falsifiers, as plotters. Now, how does that happen? It involves a very detailed process where we have another peer that comes and disproves the first peer, but not simply by, you know, refuting the facts of the alleged event. Rather, it's a very specific process. They have to actually challenge the validity of the Edom of the first peer by saying, look, place and time just doesn't add up. Meaning, you're claiming to have been at this place, at this time, and witnessed such and such scene. Well, guess what? We're coming to testify that you two people were in our company in a totally different location at that very moment that you're alleging to have been in the former location. Then the first pair become Edom Zoymimin, established as plotters, as falsifiers. Zamam typically refers to the thought process behind it, the schemers. Right? That's Zamam. They thought, they planned, they schemed to trip up this person, this victim of theirs. And what's the consequence? What happens when you're an Eid Zaymim? The halacha is v'asisem loy kasher zamam. The tables turn. We apply to the Eidim Zaymimin what they had attempted to apply to their victim, on their victim. So if they were trying to kill the victim by alleging that he murdered, we do it to them. They were trying to get this fellow to pay out money unjustifiably, we do it to them. Now they're chayiv. They have to pay this victim of theirs. Okay, so that's just a very brief, quick synopsis of the concept of Edom Zoymimin, which is going to be the topic of our learning for the next little while. And the Mishnah begins with a question, Ketzad, which actually, according to the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnah, stands for two words. When you have the word Ketzad, it means Ke'ezet Tzad. On which side, meaning which way, what's the process? How does it work? Ketzad ha'edim na'asim zoymimin. How, in fact, do Edom become Edom Zoymimin? How did they earn this lofty title, this honorable title of Edom Zoymimin? Answer is, and as we're going to see, the Gemara will start with this question. The answer doesn't seem to really solve the question. So the question is, how do we have Edom Zoymimin? What's the standard system? What's the standard process? And the answer is like this. Midin anu b'ish pleini. Shuben Grusha, Uben Chalutza. Reuven and Shimon get up in the Bezdin. We want to testify that Mr. So-and-so, Mr. Levi, who all think is a Kayan, right? Actually, he's not a Kosher or Kayan. He's not a qualified Kayan because he's a son of a Grusha, which means that his father, the Kayan, married a divorcee, which is obviously inappropriate, which makes him a chalal, disqualified from being considered a proper kohen. He shouldn't be getting truma, he shouldn't be serving in the Mikdash, etc. Ben Chalutza, or his mother went through the Chalitza system, again, the same problem. And it turns out they're Edom Zoymimin. It's all concocted, it's made up. So as we explained, as per standard Ed Zoymimin procedure, we apply the pasuk of Vasisem Loi, Kasher Zomam. Allah says La'acha, we apply to the Edom Zoymimin what they intended on bringing about on their hapless victim. Listen to this. Says the Mishnah, actually, so you would think, so in this case, what do we do? They weren't trying to kill, they weren't trying to make him pay, trying to make him puzzle. So if they're kayhanim, we make them puzzle. No. Ein oimrim ye'asaze ben grusha. Oy ben chalutza tachta. We don't apply this title of ben grusha or ben chalutza on the eight zayim. In this case, we make an exception. We give them the standard, you know, fair, the Malkus fair. 40 actually means 29. It's Lashna Pasik. 40, but we give them Malkus in lieu, or instead of the standard Kasha Zamam. And the question will be, the obvious question will be, is this a classic example of Kasha Zamam? Is this a classic Eid Zayim procedure, which typically involves flipping it over to the Eid Zayim? In this case, we're doing something totally different. We're giving them a new punishment, Malkus. That's going to be the obvious question which we're going to deal with in the Gemara. Another example of such is Me'idin Anu B'Ishplenishu Chayv Liglois or Chayv Golus. We come and testify about this person that he killed inadvertently, accidentally, in which case he has to go into exile, right? Turns out they're fakers, making it up. So you think we send them to Golus? No. Ein Oimrim Yiglez Echtachta. We don't apply Golus to the Eitzayim instead of the Elo Leike Arboim. We give him Malkus. Obvious question, says the Gemara, Ketzad Heino Edim Nasim Zomimin Miboyle. Instead of the opening question of the Mishnah being, how do we have the classic Eid Zomimin, which typically entails applying the intended penalty back onto them? Well, in this case, we don't do it. So the question should be the other way around. Let's have an example of a non-standard, typical, classic Edim Zayman procedure. Because that's what's happening. We're not giving them the intended consequence. We're giving them something totally different. Malkus. Ketzet Eino Edim Nasim Zayman Mibayle. We're not being Mekayim Kasher Zamam, says Rashi. Loloi Mekayim is Bu Kasher Zamam. Next question. V'oid, furthermore. Right? So again, Eino Edim Zayman Mibayle. That's what it should have said. V'oid, and number two, Midiktani or Diktani or Kidiktani, different versions. Look, come on. We take a look later on. Hey, we already have a Mishnah which discusses the basic, you know, steps, basic procedure. Diktani, look, come on. Avol Omer Lahem. So the second peer comes and contradicts the first peer. Hey, Chatem Eidim. How do you dare tell us about a story that took place in this location at this time? Sharei Boisya Yoyim. Guess what? On that very day, you were with us in a totally different city. Atem ha'isim imanu makim pleni. So that constitutes re'elu zayimin, that makes them zayimin. So why is the Mishnah sort of presenting it as a new question? How do we have edim zayimin? How does it work? Take a look later in the Mishnah. We have again a detailed description, step by step, play by play of how it works. And over there, it's actually, if you can say, it's a little bit more detailed because it's giving us the fundamentals, right? That the contradiction, the usurping of the Eidus has to relate to the time and place. That's a more basic fundamental, you know, presentation than what we have in our Mishnah. So we have two kashas. Again, it would seem like our Mishnah is not really providing classic examples of Eidim Zayimin. Furthermore, let's discuss later on. Answers the Gemara, Tana Hasamkai. An answer to both questions. Our Mishnah really relates back to last Masechta, Masechta Sanhedrin, where at the end of which, right before the last parak of Chelek, which speaks about Elam Haba, so at the end of the parak, Elu Heina Nechnaken, which Rashi calls Siyuma de Sanhedrin. Technically, that's the sort of the, you know, the last sugya that relates to the Hilchos Sanhedrin, of, you know, penalties and procedures involving the court system. And then we move on to Olam Haba, but that's sort of a separate topic of discussion. So at the end of the central Sanhedrin discussion, which is the end of Perek Eluhen and Nechnokin, we have a Mishnah, which makes sort of a side reference, by the way, reference to halacha of Edim Zayimin. Because you recall, Mishnah says that all Edim Zayimin will receive, right? We apply upon them the same thing they had in mind for their hapless victim. But we have some exceptions. We'll see. Okay, Tana Asam Ka'i Kala Zaymimin. Magdim Lo Isamisa. Typically, the Eden Zaymimin had intended on bringing about unjustified death penalty to a person, so we give it to them without any questions asked. Magdimin means it's a quick procedure, meaning there's no two ways about it. Chutz mizomim baskoyin ubayala. We have an exception. So they allege that a woman from a Kohen family deviated from her husband, etc. So typically by a married woman, the penalty is chenek, death by strangulation, but by a baskoyin, it's sreifa, more severe punishment because of her higher status, etc. What about Edom Zemimin, who had alleged that a woman did such and such? So they wanted to bring about Sreifa, but in effect, we just give them Chenek. That's the halacha. We learn from a pasuk. And likewise, another exception is Ubayala. The man who was involved with this woman, this is a case where it actually happened, so the woman and the man get punished. So the woman gets Sreifa, but the man only gets Chenek. So there's two unusual type of things. Shein Magdim Eloisem Misa. So there we have an example of Edom Zaymimin, but it deviates from the norm. We do not apply the strict halacha of kasher zamam lasas l'achiv. Rather, we give them a slightly different punishment. We put them to death, but through a different punishment. So coming on the heels of that Mishnah, where we found a sort of exception to the rule, now follows our Mishnah with a more extreme exception. Once we're speaking about exceptions, says the Mishnah, guess what? I have another one for you, which is even more extreme. We have other in Zaymin, such as in our Mishnah, it seems like we're not even applying anything upon them, what they intended on their victim. You see, in the case of the Bas Kohen, at least we're giving them Misa. It's slightly different procedure, but it is Misa nevertheless. But here, it doesn't relate at all to what they had in mind. They were trying to make him a Pasul, a Kohen, or give him Golas, and we give them a totally different punishment to Malchus. Ela Malchus Arboim. And what's an example, or what are the examples of such? Ketzad comes out of Mishnah and says, Me'idna in Mishplaini, Shor ben Grusha Mechalu, ben Gehulutza. We don't give them the exact punishment that they had in mind for him. And the next case, of course, is the same thing regarding Golos. Okay, so again, we have two questions. Mishnah begins with Ketzad the Edom Nasim Zaymimin, which sounds like Mishnah is presenting a classic case of Edom Zaymimin. The next question was, the fundamental steps, the basic procedure is going to be discussed later on. And that, hey, why? So the answer is, you're right. We're not coming to present, a starter lesson, so to speak. We're not giving the basic fundamental facts. We're just sort of carrying over from the last Masechta, assuming we already know the basic facts, and it's just a question of finding exceptions to the rule. We have exceptions there. We have more extreme exceptions in our Mishnah. But then, of course, we go back to basics. That's enough. Hey. So, in fact, how does it happen? Comes the Mishnah later and says, this is how it happens through these and these steps. Now comes the question of why. We know what. What about why? Why is it so that in these cases we make exception and we give them Malchus instead of Kasher Zamam? Instead of the strict interpretation of Kasher Zamam Lasas La'achav. Now, immediately, how do we know this is true? That one who intends on making a Kohen apostle only receives Malchus. Amar Rishub and Levi Damakro. The Pasuk says, this is the basic, the standard, Basisim LaKasher Zamam, right? The basic procedure is to apply onto him what he intended on applying to his victim. Kasher Zamam, we give him what he plotted, what he schemed. Pasuk contains the word loy. We apply it only to him. It cannot possibly be a punishment that affects his kids as well. He's the perpetrator, not his kids. Loy v'loy lezare. Now, that precludes making him a ben grusha, because that's going to affect his kids, because once the father is a chalal, disqualified kohen, it's going to affect and infect his kids. for generations to come. So you can't do it. V'liv salula d'day, v'loy liv salula zarei. Okay, so just limit it to him. Make him possible, not his kids. But that doesn't either work. But inan kasher zomam las yishaleka. That's not what he planned. That's not what he schemed. He tried to disqualify this unsuspecting victim and affect his kids and generations as well. So you can't modify it. You can't tailor it now and sort of shrink it. Oh, okay, we're just going to apply it to the man, not to his kids. That's dissimilar to what he tried to do. So we're sort of stuck. You can't give it to him and his kids because that's not what the Torah prescribes. You can't limit it to him because that's not what he intended on doing. So that's out. But in kasher zomam las yishaleka. That's one approach of Shem Levi's pshat. But pada aymer, I'll give you another reason. Kavachaymer, based on a kavachaymer. Uma machalal inim eschalal. Rashi explains. A kohen, skip kasher zomam for a minute. Let's go to the basic halacha. A kohen marries a grusha, not supposed to. He does it and he's machalal his kids. Question, does it affect him? Is the kohen's himself, his own status changed? But what he did, no. He affects his kids, but not himself. That's the pasuk in the Torah. It's only machalal zare. So maha machalal in mischalal, even if a person engages in activity, in behavior, in conduct that affects his kids, it still does not come back to affect him. It doesn't change his status. Certainly, habalachalal v'lechilal, but in zayman, who merely attempted to be machalal somebody, but were not successful, ain't additionally mischalal. Certainly, they should not be mechalal as well. And therefore, we don't make them chalalim. Maskev lo Ravina, if that's the case, you could undo the entire Edom Zayman process because you'll apply the same rationale to every case of Edom Zayman. Listen, Imkain, if that's the case, if you're going to adopt this Kavachem, Bitalta, Teres, Edom Zayman, you're going to obliterate the whole Sugya, the whole Parsha, the whole process of Edom Zayman. Why? Uma HaSoykel. Rashi explains. Edom were trying to bring Skila upon a person, alleging that he did something wrong, Chalol Shabbos, right? Let's say they took it all the way to the end. It was not discovered that they were, Edom Zayman until it was too late. They already killed this person. Ma'asaykel, Einan Yiskal, Halacha is actually, at this point, we do not say Kasher Zamam and kill the Edom Zayman. We'll see later in the Gemara based on a Pasuk. Ha'bal Yiskal, so certainly, an Edom Zayman who's merely trying, is attempting to bring about skila upon a hapless victim, v'loy sakal, but didn't bring it about, and it didn't certainly shloy sakal, you shouldn't get skila. So basically, you've just unraveled the entire process of Edom Zayman if you're going to adopt this kavachaymer. Apparently, kavachaymer is not valid. I mean, by hook or by crook, you have to say it's not valid. Likewise, we can't apply it in our Gemara either. So only left with the first reason, al machvarta, so the correct and clear approaches, k'deshanina mi'ikar, as we explained earlier. The first Teretz, which was Rav Shimon Levi. Well, I see some loy kasher zamam. On the one hand, it has to be something you intended. On the other hand, it can't affect your kids. So this option is out. Second case was golus. Golus. Turns out they're fakers. We don't send them to golus. How do we know this is true? Amar Rish Lakish, the Makra. Who, Yonos? Only an accidental killer will have to escape Alachas Aharim to those cities. Who believes Zayman? Only the accidental killer, but not Edom Zayman. It's not something which would apply to Edom Zayman. That's one teretz. Rabbi Yechon Aymarim. Another teretz, again based on a kavachaim. Umahu shasa masa. Imagine a person, a killer, a murderer, a regular murderer. There's a masa. There's an act, an evil act. Now let's say he does it b'meizit. Does it intentionally? He kills a person. Does golus apply? No, it's not. It's not a method of atonement that applies to an intentional murderer, right? Certainly the Edom Zayman, Shalei Osu Masa, they didn't actually do an act, they just spoke. It was a verbal transgression. And they did it intentionally, B'mezid. Einadin, certainly, doesn't that lend to reason, Shalei Yiglu, that Golus does not apply? And that explains why they don't get golos. Whoa, hold up. Vienna Senes, if anything. This very element, this mitigating element that you just mentioned, the fact that they're merely guilty of verbalizing, not actually doing, if anything, that's all the more reason to give them galus. You know why? Who shall samas b'mezid leglikli? An actual reitzeach who kills b'mezid, he doesn't deserve to go to galus. That's too light a procedure for him. It's too lenient. Keichi, tavalei kapara. Tera does not want to provide this, you know, easy solution, relatively convenient method of atonement. You killed b'mezid, you don't deserve to get this kapara. Hein, but the Edom Zayman who merely spoke, shalei also ma'asav b'mezid, nami, liglu, they should go to galus. If anything, that's more reason for them to go to galus. To be machaper on what they did, keichid lavil kapara. So basically, disagreeing with the Kal Vachomer, that can't be a reason why they don't go galus. Ela machmarta Rish Lakish, the correct approach is the first one, Rish Lakish, based on the pasuk. Okay, so basically we have two examples of exception, right, in the Mishnah, where we don't apply the standard Kasher Zama. Rather, we give them Malkus. Based on what? Based on Pesukim. Amar Ula Remez Le'edem Zayman Shaloiken. Remez Le'edem Zayman Minatoyer Benayin. And Rashi explains, we're looking for a Remez, a source, an indication in the Torah that we apply Kasher Zomam to Edom Zomim. Ask the Gemara, what do you mean Menayin? Remez Edom Zomim? Voksev, we have a pasuk. We don't need a Remez, a hint. Vasisim like Kasher Zomam. El, or rather, what we meant is like this. Remez Edom Zomim Shaloikin. Oh, Menatoy Menayin. How do we know that cases where you can't apply the, you know, the plain, strict procedure of Kasher Zomam, such as in our cases? We look for the alternative. We give them Malkus. Minayin, how do we know this is a proper approach? Dechsiv. We have a pasuk. It's Tikus HaTzadik. These are the psukim that discuss applying Malkus. It's Tikus HaTzadik. And at this point, the Gemara figures. What it means is like this. That they were matzdik. They discovered him to be righteous. Who? The Tzadik. Who's discovering it? We assume it's Dayanim, the Bezdin. They deemed him to be innocent, deemed him to be the other fellow to be guilty, right? V'itzdikus atzadik, v'yishuyus harasha. We assume we're speaking about litigants, right? In a financial, you know, dispute, you're innocent, you're guilty, and then the pasuk continues, v'haya im bin hakayis harasha. Next pasuk, well, the rasha is going to get malchus. And the obvious question is, I mean, just because Reuben was found to be liable and Shimon, you know, innocent, right? Just because Reuben has to pay Shimon, why does that give us a right to strike Shimon, Reuben, with Malkus? I mean, just because he owes him money doesn't mean he gets Malkus. What are two things related? Right? You know, Chiv Malkus is not related to litigants and financial disputes. So again, Chiv V'Hitztikus HaTzadik V'Yeshuas HaRasha. And then Vahyam bin Hakas Rasha. The obvious question is, why is that related? Mishum v'itzdikus atzadik v'shuras Rasha. It's because Shimon has to pay Reuben money. The result is that he gets Malkus. Vahyam bin Hakas Rasha. Ella, rather, we have to interpret the pasuk as follows. The pasuk is speaking about Edom, not speaking about the judges in the court and the verdicts issued by the court. We're speaking about the Edom. Means like this. There were Edom who were falsifiers, liars. They came and they alleged, they framed Reuben. Okay? So they took a tzaddik, an innocent, righteous man, and they painted him in a bad light, presented him as a rasha. Falsely, right? So that's the first part of the Gemara. Edom she'yirshiu as hatzadik. They took a tzadik, made him into a rasha. Comes along the next peer to the rescue. Va'os edom achrin. Comes the next peer and says, "Hold it! What are you talking about? You people are liars." Ve'itztiku as hatzadik demikara, and they restored the righteous man's good name. at the same time, on the flip side, they turned the Edom into Edom Zaymen. V'shavinu l'hanu rishoyim. Right? The same breath. They restored his good name, but they they knocked off the first Edom. So that's the classic Ed Zaymen, procedure. What's the end result? In some cases, Malchus applies. In cases where you cannot do the classic Kasher Zomim, such as an Awa Gemara, V'hoya Menachis HaRasha. So Malchus applies. There you go. Malchus is the alternative to the strict Kasher Zomim. The Tei Beklei asks the Gemara, why a new pasuk from Malchus? You know, an Eid who's lying has violated one of the Aseres HaDibreis. Milaisana, right? Milaisana Barecha Eid Shaka. You shouldn't offer false testimonies. Let him get Malchus on account of that pasuk. Why look for a new pasuk? The answer is, testifying falsely, as evil as it is, it doesn't involve a physical act. Like, no, the halach is when there's a lav, referring to a sin that doesn't involve a physical act, there's no malchus. And that's why we need a new pasuk. Nevertheless, we do apply malchus in these cases. There are four unique elements to Eidim Zayimin that we must remember. First of all, Ein Asim Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. We never make them Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza as per our Mishnah. And number two, again, as per our Mishnah, Ein Goyle Eir Miklat. They never go to Eir Miklat. Number three, Ve'im Nishalman Sakayfer. They came and they testified that Reuben's animal killed somebody. Halacha is, if it's true, the owner of the animal has to pay something called kaifer, compensation to the victim's family. Turns out there are Edim Zayimin on this type of case. We will not obligate them to pay kaifer instead of the, in lieu of the victim. We don't do it. Ve'ein nimkarim be'divri. Likewise, if they testified that somebody stole money, and the halacha is, if he's unable to pay up, he would be sold as a Jewish slave. We never do that to them, even though they were trying to do that to somebody else. So we have four items. And here's a fifth item, Mishum Rabbi Akiva Amru. The following was stated in the name of Rabbi Akiva. Af ein Mishalman api atzmein. They cannot self-incriminate themselves. They cannot come and self-initiate, say, well, we are Edom Zayimin and we don't want to pay you. It doesn't work like that. Rashi explains, let's say they turned into Edom Zayimin in a certain bezdin, and the litigant was not able to turn around and put them on trial to get them to pay. They took the first plight out. Okay, they escaped in time. And now they have their regrets, remorse, and they come to the new bezdin. They say, you know what? We want to sort of bear our hearts. We were Edom Zayimin, and we were proven to be falsifiers in such and such bezdin, and we want to pay up. We will not obligate them to pay, because as we're going to explain later, it's really a knas. It's a penalty. Because they didn't actually steal. They didn't actually... A penalty, one cannot self-incriminate himself. He cannot self-initiate a penalty payment. Okay, so we have five items regarding Edom Zayimin. And we can go through them one by one. So number one, Ein Asin Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza Kedamaran, as we've just discussed, in great length. Ve'en Goyin Lo'er Miklot Kedamaran, again, we just discussed. Ve'en Mishalman Sa Kofer. Why? Why not pay kofer compensation? Because this brisa is of the opinion that the compensation payments to a victim's family is not really monetary. It's not, you're not filling a loss. It's not a monetary payment per se. It's an atonement. It's a kapara. You're not reciprocating for lost value. A person doesn't have market value. You're not paying for a lost item, a damaged, possession. You're paying for a person who was killed through your animal. It's a kapara because you failed to watch your animal, whatever. Now, conceptually, right? It's not a thing that can be given to Edom Zayimin. They were not involved in this, right? You can't have them bring a kapara for something they didn't actually do. Their animal never killed anybody, so it's not applicable, period. Man tana kurva kapara. Who's of the opinion? A kaifer payment is really just a kapara. Amar chizri shmol, b'noi, Shobrechem Breke is that shita. The Sani, we have a brisa. Here comes an interesting question. So the animal killed somebody. We pay compensation. Whose value do we reckon with? What determines the amount of compensation? The pasuk says, "The sani v'nasam pidyon nafshik." One has to pay pidyon nafshik. It's sort of it's like a redemption, so to speak, for his nefesh. Right, the value of the nefesh. Now, who's nefesh? The victim's value or the perpetrator's value? By the way, when we talk about value, we're speaking, how do you determine value? There's no real value to a human being. We envision as though he would be sold as a slave in the market. That's the only way to determine. So in any case, who are we looking at, the victim or the perpetrator? The main Nizik. Tanakhama says, the kaifer is the amount that the victim was worth. However, the perpetrator, the animal owner's value, is what's paid. What's the machlekes about? My lab, let's assume, the machlekes revolves around this very question. What is the nature of this payment? How do you label this payment? What is it? Is it monetary compensation? Or is it a kapara, an atonement? The Mar Savar. First Shita says it's the victim's value because he holds kufra mamayna. It's considered monetary compensation for an actual loss. Umar's Savar kufra kapara, but the second Shita, Rishmol Rekha, holds no. You can't. It's not monetary loss that you're paying for. It's a kapara. So in order to get a kapara, like we find, you know, a carbon, a person has to sort of make up for his sin, make up for his, by offering a payment. And payment is like in lieu of having to give himself away, so to speak. It's a pidyon. Exchange for of himself, right? Amar Papa, no, not necessarily so. Lloyd, the Kuliyam Kuf Kapara, perhaps all Shitis in this price will hold that it's really a Kapara. It's just a question of how to determine the amount of kapara. Vachabakam iflagi mar savar b'dinizuk shaminan. Moshita says, one have kapara? Okay, that's the term based on the value of the victim. Mar savar b'dinizuk shaminan. Moshita says, no, based on the value of the mazik. It's just two ways of determining how much the kapara should be. Two ways to look at it. Do you get a kapara by giving the damim of the nizuk? Rashi says, v'hachi havel kapara. Certainly the end goal is to atone for the perpetrator and for what he did and for his carelessness. But how do you get to that kapara? By compensating, by paying the loss of value of the nizik. Umar Sabi, but the mazik shamina. Other Shita says no. It has to be based on the mazik's value. Okay, my to my durabana. Having said that, but where are they sourced? Meaning, why would you say this way or that way? Determined based on his value or his value. So the Rabbana Mini di Tanakama, who holds Dmei Nizuk, is based on a Gzera Shava. Nema Hashasa Lamata, Nema Hashasa Lamala. We have concept of Hashasa, applying a payment, determining a payment, down later on in the Psukim. That's in, you know, Pasuk we just mentioned. Im Kaifer Yushas Olav, Kaifer will be assessed on him. V'nema Hashasa Lamala. And further up in the parasha, previously we also discuss a case where a person attacked a woman and the babies were harmed. And again, we have the Lashon Kasher Yashis, so the payment was assessed and applied. And we connect the two discussions, the two payments. Ma'ala halam b'din nizuk, just like upstairs we speak about the value of the babies, right? Afkan b'din nizuk, here as well, when an animal struck a person down, it's based on the victim's value. Rav Shmuel disagrees. He says, look, over here, Pasuk says you pay pidyon nafshei. He has to pay, you know, exchange for himself. Money is in lieu of his own nefesh. Ksiv. So clearly it's based on his value. Rabbanan, they respond, and that's true, pidyon nafshei ksiv. Ultimately, it does count as pidyon nafshei of the perpetrator, miu, but still, in terms of quantifying it, yeah, in terms of the nature of what's happening, it's pidyon of the perpetrator, but how much constitutes pidyon nafshoi, that's determined based on what he did, on who he harmed and who he killed. Miu ki shamin, when we assess it, but then it's based on the victim's value. So back to the brisa. Eidim, zemimin are never obligated to pay kaifer. Reason? Because it's a kapara. Kapara for doing this type of act, which they never did. Then we have Eidim karm evad ifri. They allege that a person robs, and when a person robs and he has nothing to pay, he sold as an evad ifri. But even if it turns out they were just faking, falsifying the whole testimony, they will never be turned into evad ifri. When does this apply? In all cases? Or in just specific cases where, let's see, Savar Rav Amnuna Lameimar. Initially, Rav Amnuna figured, Hanamila, when is this true? When do we apply this idea that they do not get sold as slaves? Hanamila Hecha de Islay de Day. Where the victim that they were trying to heap this upon would have theoretically had sufficient funds to pay back this alleged robbery, which he never did, of course, but he had money. So he never would have been taken to this point of being sold as an Eved Ivri. The Migu de Iulain is Davin, so since he would never have gotten to that point, Inu Namilam is Davin, so they as well. They weren't trying to get him sold, because he wasn't going to get sold. So they're not going to be sold either. Aval Hechad Leslie did they, but let's say their hapless victim had no money. Had he been incriminated, he would have been sold. So in this case, Havagav the Islul did do, even though they, the Eidim Zayman, have their own funds, which they could theoretically use just to pay up for this alleged robbery that they alleged happened, still Mizdavno they'll be sold, because ultimately they were trying to heap that upon the victim, trying to get him sold. Amuli Rav, as Rav responds, no. But Amulay, they can tell him, look, we can't be worse off than suppose you would have had money. You would have had money. Mihava Mizdabnas, would you have been sold? No. So, Ananami, us as well, Le Mizdabnir, we're not, we shouldn't be sold because fact is we have money. All we said was that you robbed. The fact that you happen not to have money, that's circumstantial. Suppose you win a lottery tomorrow, you're not going to be sold because you'll have enough to pay up that. Compensate for that alleged robbery. So now that we have money, we shouldn't either be sold. Ella Savar Rav Amnun Lameimar. Okay, so that's the first point. Rava undoes Rav Amnun's perception, comes back to Rav Amnun and says, you know what? Okay, fine. Agree. But let's say, Hanamili, we can posit, we can suggest, Heichad Islay Oyle the Day, Oyle the Do, Adis Halacha, that they're not sold as Avodim. That will apply whether he has money, their victim had money on hand to avoid being sold, or they have money on hand to avoid being sold. So you're right, either way, their spirit. But agree to me, in a case of Aval Hecha de Lesle, suppose their hapless victim didn't have money on hand, and had they gone all the way, he would have been sold. Likewise, the Eidim Zayman also don't have extra cash on hand. What do they do? So in this case, it's fair on all sides. They were trying to sell him, even though they didn't speak about selling him, but ultimately that's what they were going to do. That was the direct result of their testimony. And they can't claim that they have recourse. They don't have recourse. They don't have money either. So let's sell them, Mizdami. I'm the rubber. Rubber responds, no, it's a pasuk. It's not just about, you know, equations and calculations. And the pasuk says they're exempt from being sold, period. It never applies to Eidim Zayman. Similar to the Allah of the Angrusha and the Golas. I'm the rubber. Menukam, the Vasai. I'm Rahman. The pasuk says a robber, a real robber, who can't afford paying up, is sold off as an Eved. His robbery, but as opposed to due to plotting, meaning Eidim Zayman don't have this halacha, they're never sold as a fatim, period. Okay, Mishum Rukiva Amru, one more point. My time at the Rukiva, why is it that Eden Zayman can never self-initiate? They can't come in and admit and confess and have them and have us charge them for it. My time at the Rukiva, Kasavi holds Knasu. Any punishment applied to Eden Zayman is not due to an actual violation, actual, he didn't commit the crime, right? It's a knas, a penalty, because you try to trip somebody up. Uknas, and we know this is a universal halacha, knas, ein mishal, api atzmai, one may never, one cannot incriminate himself regarding knas. I'm a rabbi, I'll prove to you it's a knas. Teda, sharei leosu mas av neirogin. Neirogin, mishal. The Eden Zayman didn't kill anybody, and we killed them. They didn't steal or borrow money. Still, we charge them. Right? We apply to them what they intended on applying to someone. So apparently it's not actual compensation for actual loss or actual punishment for actual crime. Right? This Misa doesn't fit the crime that they did. They didn't actually do something that deserves this Misa. It's only because they're trying to get down to somebody else. So we flip it onto them. So it's a knas. Because a knas relates to something which is sort of not symmetrical. A non-symmetrical situation is a knas. Amar of Nachman Teda, I'll bring you another proof to this point. Shari Mamin Biad Balu Mishalman. True, they allege that Reuben borrowed from Shimon, but the fact is they didn't get to the point of extracting the money from him. Reuben still has his money. Lucky for him, they were proven false before. He had to pay anything, and still we make them pay. Now there's no actual loss here, so why they paying must be a knas. Mind you, the loy osamas. Mind you, what does Rav Nachman mean that the fellow, this victim, still has his money? Losamasa. They never carried out their intentions. It was not actually actualized in reality. Well, then he's just repeating what Rabbi said. Rabbi made the same point a minute ago. Hainu the Rabbi. Hey, v'chein Rav Nachman, you're right. Rav Nachman just echoing v'chein what Rabbi said. Both coming to explain this point. Why is it a knas? Because there was never actual loss. Or there was never actual miso applied to this victim. So the fact that they're getting it upon themselves, it's only because it's a knas, it's a penalty applied by the Torah. And therefore, they can't self-initiate. Because a knas can only be applied, but not self-initiated. Okay, so in summation, Eden Zayman. We concluded that it's only later on in Daf Hey where we're going to actually present it step by step. Here is just sort of a continuation, a spillover from the last discussion in Masechah Sanhedrin, where you find some exceptions to the rule of Kasha Zamam. We have two examples in the Mishnah where they're not going to get anything reminiscent of what they attempted to heap onto their hapless victim. Rather, we give them Malkus. Why not Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza? We have a pasuk. We tried Rul Kavachem, it didn't really work out. Why not Golos? Again, we have a pasuk. We tried Rul Kavachem, it didn't work out. We did find a pasuk that Malchus is applied in these special circumstances. We can't use the regular pasuk of Leisana because it's a Lav Shem Emaisa. And we conclude with the four things applicable to Ebed, to Eden Zayman, and Kontra Bakiva, a fifth as well, which is Einim Mishalma Pi Atzma because it's a Knas, as explained by Rabbah and Rav Nachman. All the best to you and Hatzlacha Rav.